Welcome and thank you for joining this evening's virtual question and answer return to school town hall for parents and families of children and youth with medically complex needs. My name is Jennifer Prue, Director, Integrated Care Delivery at CHEO and the planning lead for the Kids Come First Health Team. I will be the moderator for this session. Tonight's town hall is an initiative of the Kids Come First Health Team. Kids Come First is a collective comprised of over 60 organizations, family and youth partners, and physicians who share the common goals of connecting child and youth health services for better quality, faster access, and easier transitions. First, I would like to review some housekeeping items for our time together this evening. This session will be audio only, with the exception of video for our sign language interpreter, and thank you for your work this evening. All participants have been muted. Panelists will be unmuted one at a time when they will be responding to a question. The session will be recorded and will be posted to CHEO's website and shared with our partners on tonight's panel. We appreciate that this is a stressful time for families, that information is changing at a rapid pace, and that it can be difficult to navigate. Our panelists this evening will be providing information based on our current knowledge. We encourage you to continue to review the latest updates and information from Ottawa Public Health, the school boards, and members of your child's care team. There was a lot of interest from parents and families for the session, and we received a large number of questions. Many of the questions were about similar themes, and some were very specific to unique students or family circumstances. In an effort to be as inclusive as possible, we will do our best to provide comprehensive responses that we hope many families will find helpful. As such, we will not be reading each individual question, but will aim to address the key issues covering five themes that parents have raised. We will spend the next 40 to 45 minutes responding to these themes and questions that were submitted by parents and caregivers. For the last 15 minutes, we will open up our chat option in Zoom for those who may wish to ask a question that way. So with that, we will now begin our question and answer session. The first theme that we will be addressing this evening is general information about COVID-19. The first question that we have is, how is COVID-19 transmitted? And we will now ask Dr. Nisha Sampi to respond to this first question.
Hi, good evening. So COVID-19 is primarily transmitted through droplets from an infected person that are spread to others through coughing, sneezing, runny nose, and contact with contaminated surfaces. So, you know, the majority of children and youth who become infected with COVID-19 are either asymptomatic or have mild symptoms, such as cough, fever, and sore throat. And this is why we have such a strong focus in public health education around hand washing, physical distancing, and face coverings to avoid coming into contact with potentially infectious droplets.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Dr. Sampi. Our next question under the general theme of COVID-19 information is, what are the options to have my child with medically complex needs tested for COVID? Where and how could we be tested? And do household contacts that are not showing symptoms need to be tested if one child has symptoms? So I know that is a multi-part question and I can repeat some of those, but I'm now going to turn it over to our colleague at Ottawa Public Health, Natalie.
Good night, everybody. I'm Natalie Lair. I'm a public health nurse working with Ottawa Public Health, and my role is I'm on the COVID-19 school support team with a strong CHEO background. I worked there for 10 years. Thanks for having me tonight. I'll answer it in two parts just because it was a two-part question. So the first part was, what are the options and where can I get my child tested? So we know that parents know best and they know what their children can manage. But what we suggest, if their children are symptomatic, we do suggest going to CHEO through the emergency department, given the fact that they do have complex needs and sometimes the changes are so subtle in the presentation that they could benefit from an assessment there. However, if they are asymptomatic and the parent feels that their child can be tested at one of the regular assessment centers like Brewer, Heron Road, or Moody Drive, they could be well managed there if they are asymptomatic. The second part of the question is, do household contacts that aren't showing symptoms need to be tested? The answer is no, because the priority is really to get anyone who is symptomatic tested first to figure out who potentially has COVID. Depending on that result, we'll then assess if the other household members need to be tested. However, anyone who is in the household with the person who is symptomatic should be isolating until we do have confirmation of that negative result.
Great. Thank you so much, Natalie. The third question under this theme is, who will be prioritized for the COVID-19 vaccine once it's available? And again, Natalie, I'll turn to you at Public Health, please.
All right. So unfortunately, we don't have any new information with regards to the vaccine as to when it's going to be ready. What we do know, once that vaccine is ready, those decisions will be made at a higher level of government. So that will be from the federal and the provincial governments who will be making those recommendations to Ottawa Public Health. That's just like any other provincial immunization schedule that we received. They'll obviously want to make the biggest impact that they can, and we will take direction from those higher up, from the ministry guidelines as far as to who we'll prioritize the vaccine for.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to move on now to the second theme, which is medical guidance for children with medically complex needs. So we did have some questions here around how are we identifying or who are children with medically complex needs? And then how should I decide about whether I can send my medically complex child to school? So we're going to ask two of our panelists this evening to respond to this question. And our first panelist is a family partner with the Kids Come First Health team, and her name is Stephanie Paravan. So Stephanie.
Sorry, were you able to hear me just now?
No, sorry, Stephanie.
Okay, sorry. So one of my first recommendations to parents out there is to try to utilize any online resources you can. Holland Bloorview and CHEO, as well as the CDC, all have documents released in regards to back to school. Many of these can be found through the CHEO website. If you go through popular links on their main page and go to COVID-19 and under the topic of back to school, you'll find the Holland Bloorview as well as the Sick Kids document. The document that I found the most helpful is under the heading for healthcare professionals. But in fact, I think this will be very, very helpful to families in helping to make the decision to go back to school or not. The bottom line of all this is there are many unknowns, and each decision that we make as families is going to have an element of calculated risk, whether it's keeping your child at home or sending them to school. My advice is to write down your concerns, speak to the school to find specifics, discuss the info with the medical team that knows your child best. Unfortunately, there's very little time to do all of this. We all understand that, and things are constantly changing. Remind yourself that there is no right or wrong decision right now. We're all doing the best we can for our kids in the moment with the information that we're able to access.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Stephanie. And I'm also going to ask Dr. Toby Odsent to respond to this question as well.
Hi, thanks, Jen, and thanks, Stephanie. I absolutely echo what Stephanie said. So I'm a pediatrician at CHEO who looks after patients with medical complexity. And one thing just to be clear about in terms of medical complexity, because we got so many great questions about parents, and we absolutely, you know, your concerns, whether your child has asthma or diabetes or multiple issues, including assistive devices and equipment. All of your questions are valid. And I think the wonderful thing to see about that is that we have so many parents that care deeply about their children, that are strong advocates of their children, of our parent group, as well as so many organizations in the community that do care about the well-being of your children, and everybody just wants to do the best and try and get it right. And as Stephanie said, there's not a lot of right answers to be found, just because every child and family situation is unique. But I would echo what Stephanie said, is that I think that the guidance for healthcare professionals for children with chronic medical conditions during return to school, which is on the CHEO website, is a great document. There's also a back to school self-guided decision-making tool on the CDC website that I think might be really helpful for some families. And then at the end of the day, I think having conversations with people that you trust, talking to your school, and recognizing that the higher the level of your child's medical complexity, the more we're probably all going to have to work together to try and figure out a unique solution that works for you and for your child. And as Stephanie says, you know, nobody's got all the answers, but we really are wanting to try and work together and communicate to try and come up with the best possible option to support your child and their health and their learning needs. I'll pass it back there.
Great. Thanks very much, Dr. Odson. So our next question under medical guidance is, what if my child's sibling, or another family member is immune compromised? How do we keep them safe? And I believe we have Dr. Ann Pham Huy on the line, so I will turn it over to her to respond.
Hi, I know that Dr. Pham Huy is on service, so I'll take the opportunity to jump in. It's Nisha Thampi, from Infection Prevention and Control at CHEO. You know, the principles of infection prevention that would have already been in place at home would apply here, keeping them safe through frequent hand washing, no sharing of foods or utensils, and when they're is a family member who is symptomatic, being especially careful about physical contact and sharing of secretions, spreading of secretions. And
great,
of course, and sorry, I'll just add as well, getting for family members, especially this season, getting the flu vaccine is part of the overall infection prevention strategy, because we have seen among immune-compromised children and youth, higher rates of complication related to influenza. So that would be in addition to the general infection prevention practices at home.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Thampi. Okay. We received a number of questions regarding obtaining medical letters or exemptions that are specific to your child's needs. So I'm going to ask Dr. Jane Little, who's a community pediatrician and a physician leader with the Kids Come First Health team, to respond to this question. So Dr. Little.
Good evening. My first hope is that everybody's staying safe during these times, and ultimate respect for, you know, you're taking your time as parents to do what's best for your children. With regard to letters, I'm going to address it in two ways. I'm going to address letters that would have been required pre-COVID. These would be letters with regard to medication and be it specific therapies provided at school. Those type of letters should still be available, and that would be discussion with your healthcare provider or most responsible person, be it specialist or a physician. With regard to letters for, be it exemptions, this one I am quite challenged to provide you with an answer this evening. This is a very, based on your questions and the questions I'm receiving and my colleagues are receiving, has generated a lot of discussion, and I can reassure you this is a priority that is being addressed And I think there will be action taken over the next week with regard to how do we and what steps will need to be taken. Presently, I have no absolute specific answers to say who provides or what type of letter will be required or if letters will be required, be it for an autistic child not to wear a mask or children not to be at school because of certain specifics. So I apologize if that is not a specific enough answer, but please rest assured this is a very, very important topic, and it is a high priority and it is being addressed.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Little. And I'm going to ask you to stay unmuted here for a second. Our next question, we're going to have three of our panelists respond. So Dr. Little, Christine Kessler from the Ottawa Carleton District School Board, followed by Manon Seguin with the Ottawa Catholic School Board. So children with medically complex needs may have some differences at baseline, which could be perceived as COVID symptoms. Who determines when symptoms prompt concern? So Dr. Little, I'll ask you to kick us off, and then we'll move over to Christine afterwards.
I think, again, topic of discussion, topic that has yet to have confirmed answers, so I will not be able to provide you with a black and white answer this evening. I think it is important that where possible in the school environment, our medically complex patients be cared for and attended to, be it academically or therapy or care-wise, by people who already know them and have pre-existing experience with them, because I think that is going to be a huge piece to this issue. We are asking that parents potentially be able to write letters of attestment of their child's baseline status. Where absolutely necessary, there will and can be discussion with your healthcare provider, be it your primary healthcare provider and or your specialist, to see what else might be necessary in this case. So again, we're still in discussion phase. I recognize there's short time, but this is being addressed with regard to what will be necessary. How a letter can be used is also going to be redirected to, say, public health, because symptoms can be representative of chronic baseline status, but they can also be representative of COVID. And how that's going to be addressed will be in discussion with public health as well.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Little. So I'm going to turn it over to Christine Kessler with the Ottawa Carleton District School Board to respond to this question as well.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I'm Christine Kessler, Assistant Principal of Learning Support Services with the Ottawa Carleton District School Board. And similar to what Dr. Little said, communication is extremely important as we work with the family to understand the needs of each of our students. It's very important for school staff to understand a child's baseline in order to be able to assess any changes in the student. Our staff have received training on the signs and symptoms of COVID. But of course, a lot of our decision making will be based on that individual child and in consultation with staff from Ottawa Public Health.
Great. Thanks very much, Christine. And I'll now turn over to Manon Seguin from the Ottawa Catholic School Board to respond as well.
Thank you very much. So my name is Manon Seguin, and I am Superintendent of Special Education Student Services with the Ottawa Catholic School Board. I would like to start by saying that we do have on our website lots of information for parents, so please do not hesitate to turn to the website and see the frequently asked questions, and you will see great resources and fact sheets from CHEEL. However, for this question, I wanted to concur with what has been said already. It is communication between home and school that will continue to be key. There are no students that enter our buildings that we don't know, and especially the students that would have complex needs. There are meetings with parents and school staff to understand what these needs are before entering the school. Therefore, the staff is aware of what are the expected symptoms for students' conditions and what are not expected for these students as well. Now, the day of these students will start like the day of all students, where parents will have to do a self-screening using the tools from the OPH site, the back to school, and determine first before sending the student at school if the student is actually deemed to be at school on that day. When the staff receive and welcome the student in their classes, if they observe symptoms that are not what they were expecting or that are unusual, obviously the teachers will be informing the principal. There will be a call home to the parents with discussions. If the symptoms are deemed concerning, obviously there will be an isolation room. The student will be supervised, and then the parents will be called to pick up the child and continue with a follow-up conversation with their medical practitioner. So what we are putting in place for all students is very much the same. However, for students with medically complex situations, obviously, there are symptoms that we are expecting before they enter the school.
Thank you very much, Menno and Christine. Okay, we're now going to move into the third theme of questions that we received. And just looking at the time, we have about 25 minutes or so, I think, before we'll open up the chat in the question and answers in the chat. So this next theme is around risk mitigation. So talking about infection prevention and control measures in the school. So there were a number of questions about what training school staff will have and will receive about infection prevention and control measures, as well as questions about school cleaning protocols. So I'm going to ask my colleagues at both the Ottawa Carleton District School Board and Ottawa Catholic School Board to respond to this. And we'll start with Peter Simmons with the Ottawa Carleton Board, please.
Thanks, Jen, and good evening, everyone. I am Peter Simmons. I have the distinct pleasure of being the superintendent with responsibility for learning support services with the Ottawa Carleton District School Board, and I would like to extend my appreciation for the invitation to participate tonight. As we've heard from other people, I'm sure we can all appreciate that the information and direction continues to shift, but we are making progress, and we're a lot further ahead than we were 2 weeks ago. So with the caveat that we are in a dynamic environment, I would like to highlight our district's website, which has current information and is regularly updated as new information becomes available. So with respect to staff training, as you're aware, likely aware, we were able to shift three professional development days to the start of the year. And we're using that to provide our staff with important professional learning. A significant part of this training is emphasizes health and safety training, including the use of personal protective equipment or PPE. At the school level, we're ensuring that staff have access to PPE and, where necessary, enhanced PPE. So when we think about some of our students who are medically complex, it may be necessary, in depending on the task to be completed, that staff wear gowns and face shields in addition to masks and gloves. Schools do have access to disinfectant and cleaning supplies. And we have tried to make accommodations for some students. For example, we know that there will be students who will struggle with the pump-style disinfectant dispenser. I'm making hand gestures. I know you can't see me. So with the pump-style disinfectant dispenser, so we've arranged for spray bottles to assist in those cases, for example. And we'll continue to monitor that as we go forward into welcoming students back into our buildings. It is important to note that schools are not clinical or medical settings, and as a previous speaker acknowledged, the highly personal nature of these decisions. With that said, we are also focusing on training for our custodial staff, specifically related to cleaning routines that we've worked with Ottawa Public Health in developing. And also, you may have heard both the Ontario Ministry of Education and just recently the federal government have announced funding that will allow us to further supplement staffing, which will go a long way to help us mitigate the risk associated with the return to school and to prioritize student, staff, and safety.
Thank you very much, Peter. And Menno, I'll turn it back to you for a response for the Ottawa Catholic School Board, please.
Thank you very much. I will not repeat everything that Peter has said because it is very similar with the Ottawa Catholic School Board. I would like parents to know that we have been working in collaboration with the Ottawa District School Board, of course, in numerous conversations, as well with the OPH for all kinds of approvals that necessitated in order to open our schools soon. Therefore, what we are doing is very similar. However, I would like to add as well that students who would be medically fragile and the students that we welcome into our school, this is not new that we have our staff that is trained for infections, prevention, and control measures. So we have been doing this for many years. However, obviously, this time with COVID, there are additional awareness training that needed to happen. And I do want to say that it is mandatory for staff. So whether they are educators or non-educators, it is the same mandatory training. As well, obviously, there are some different responsibilities that our staff would have around this. And I would agree that our custodial staff is using disinfectant that is hospital grade, and that they will be using that throughout the day, cleaning touch points, of course. And I do want to say that the cleaning, the sanitizing, disinfecting will be happening in schools. The PPEs, as Peter has mentioned, obviously is made available to staff, and the staff have been trained on how to use these PPEs and in which situation they should be using those PPEs. And I agree that the situation is fluid. It continues to evolve. Therefore, if ever we would need additional training, all the boards would consider, obviously, having additional training if it would be deemed necessary by OPH or the Ministry of Education.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Menno. Under the theme here of risk mitigation, we also received a number of questions about mask wearing at school. So what process will schools follow for children who cannot wear masks? And how will children with anxiety about wearing a mask be supported by the schools? So perhaps, Christine, I can turn it to you to respond for the Otto Carlton Board.
Thank you, Jen. I'd just like to start by saying that we recognize and understand that the wearing of masks may not be appropriate for a number of our students, including those who have higher medical needs and or sensory needs or developmental disabilities. So at this point, I would just want to sort of echo what Dr. Little said about the complexities of looking at this. We are in the process of having a conversation, a discussion at our school board related to an exemption process for students grades 4 to 12 to basically address their needs in terms of not having to wear a mask. With children where it's perhaps, related to anxiety in the case of the example, what we would say is that where children are able to manage masks, even if it's for a shorter period of time, that we would be encouraging that. Again, very much tailored to the individual needs of that child and in consultation with parents and caregivers who know their children best. However,
I think it's a little bit challenging for me to answer this question fully because so much of it depends on our work with those individual families and what's best for their child and what can we manage from our side at schools. This is our ongoing work over these next days, and we should be able to communicate more about that very soon.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Christine. And Mano, I'll turn it back to you to respond as well for the Ottawa Catholic Board.
Okay, thank you. And of course, I agree with what was said. We are in a similar situation. Now, we all know that mask wearing is mandatory in school for students in grade 4 and up. However, students who cannot, for a reason or another, wear a medical note, a mask, would need a medical note, and they would need to bring this to their school administrator or teacher. We need to continue communicating with parents, however, on health and safety practices, and we believe that masks are absolutely important, but teaching the hand washing continues to be important, and the physical distancing where possible is very important. So we have created a video for parents and the same video for staff that can be used in order to support our students to understand the importance of this. And if it is possible, we would like to support families and parents in the teaching of their children to perhaps tolerate as much as possible a mask. Some students will not be able to, but perhaps some students after a while will be able to wear masks for some of the time. And that would be important, obviously, to continue that process with parents. We believe that in some situations as well, that there are families that are saying that their child may not be able to wear a mask, but perhaps a hat with a face shield could be something that their child would wear in lieu of a mask if they cannot wear a mask. So these discussions are still happening. Masks are mandatory. However, we are open in conversation with families about what is necessary when it is accompanied by a medical note.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Manal. So just keeping an eye on the time, we have about 12 minutes before we'd like to try to open it up for some chat questions. So keeping under our theme of risk mitigation, how will the school boards, parents, and public health work together to determine whether my child's symptoms prompt concern? And I think we'll start with Christine and then Manon, followed by public health and our family partner, Stephanie. So Christine, I'll turn it over to you, please.
Thank you, Jen. I'm very pleased to say that we've had an ongoing relationship with Ottawa Public Health and nursing support at schools. And the addition of OPH nurses is further enhancing that relationship. So what we envision is that close partnership with parents and caregivers, and again it points back to the piece about communication and understanding that student and their baseline, and then of course taking into consideration those individual circumstances of students who are more medically fragile or who have more medical complexity. So Our approach then is a partnership approach where everyone's voice plays an important role, and that would be managed through the school team where the principal is the lead and the teacher also, and any other supporting staff would be part of that conversation. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Christine. And Manon, I'll turn it to you, please.
Yes, I'd like to concur, obviously, with what was said. So I know we are repeating this, but the conversation between the families and the school continues to be important in the expectation of what will happen throughout the day. And I do agree that if the school has hesitation, they will contact the families, but we will not hesitate as well to seek advice from our Ottawa Public Health nurses that will have school assignments or anyone in that area that could help us make some decisions. So obviously communication is important.
Thank you. And Nathalie from Ottawa Public Health, is there anything you'd like to add here?
Thank you. Yeah, I don't want to be too repetitive because we're strapped on time. So our role as OPH will be giving the good screening tools that we had mentioned already that are on our website. And then when it comes to symptom concerns, once again, it will be about communication. And they are correct that we will be having school nurses that the school principals will be able to be in contact regularly to answer those questions, because lots of it will be case by case. Also, we will encourage parents to consult with their healthcare providers, as they might know their child's baseline even better, and they can discuss the symptoms that the children are experiencing. And I just want to reiterate, as far as collaboration, OPH will be playing an important role if and when there's a positive case, and as well as outbreak prevention. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And Stephanie, our family partner, did you have anything you'd like to add here? Yes, there's another partner that I think should be considered through this situation, and that is the LIN. Many of these complex children receive LIN services through the school, such as nursing, occupational or physiotherapy, and they may be one of the primary contacts for families to get in touch with any issues with their medically complex child. So I think it's important to include the LIN coordinators in that. I also would encourage a partnership with CHEO, which is already existing, but just in questions, because CHEO screens daily children with medical complexities. So if any schools or any other organizations are concerned around that, I'm sure there's a contact at CHEO that they could get in touch with in regards to that. Another thing that is, it's a little bit off of the question, but I think it's really important to put out there for all of our families, is a peer support through this difficult time. Please reach out to your peers, whether it's through an organized group, through Navigator or Roger Nielsen House, or just your own community. Reach out and talk to each other. A lot of the times that's where we get our best ideas for coping. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Stephanie. I'm going to move us into our fourth theme. There's some questions there that I'd like to make sure we have time to address this evening. So in terms of supports to children who may be learning from home this school year, many parents have asked about what school learning supports will be available, and including things like what access they will have to educational assistant or EA support. I'm going to, again, turn it to Christine with the Ottawa Carleton Board, and then Manon for ramps here, please.
Thank you, Jen. In terms of supports for students, many parents and caregivers will know that those supports and services are individualized to the needs of our students and documented in their individual education plans. So essentially what I want to say is that support for remote learning is available, whether it's through the work of the classroom teacher. Absolutely, it could be additional support from an educational assistant. Perhaps in our school board, we also have learning resource teachers at the elementary level. And we also have itinerant teachers of assistive technology if it's a matter of support for technology use at home and access to learning that way. So these things, again, would be assessed based on the needs of the student, and we're looking to maximize their opportunities to learn at home through those various means, and also to work collaboratively with families in terms of scheduling those supports and that learning time and how that fits in with family life.
Excellent. Thank you, Christine. And Menno.
Yes. So I'd like to obviously echo what was said. It is important that we continue to keep in mind the IEPs of our students, whether they are face-to-face or whether they are learning virtually this year. So I would like to say that we will continue to support all students, whether they need support from our psychologists, social worker, addiction counselors, mental health workers, whether that is in person, of course, or virtual. We have now been able to turn to virtual platform in order to provide counseling, and that is available. For students who would be learning virtually, and if they need a psyched assessment or an SLP assessment from our staff, obviously, we would be in contact with parents if these students are learning from home and to see if it is possible for them to bring them in at a certain location that would be thought of ahead of time and if that assessment could continue, especially if it has to be done face-to-face. And if that is the situation, obviously, we would put that in place. If not, then we would discuss when would be the appropriate time to do this. In terms of educational support, obviously, this is very important for our students, and we are currently looking into distributing the support to numerous classrooms where we have students who have individual needs and would need that extra support. So in terms of what is happening for students who are learning from home, we will continue to outreach to their needs and to be in collaboration with the families.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Mena. Okay, we also had, in terms of supports to children at home, there was a number of questions that came in that said that what therapy services will be available in schools and will these be available to students who will be learning from home? So I'm actually going to respond to this. This is Jennifer Prue speaking from CHEO. So with respect to school-based rehabilitation services, this is a program that CHEO now has oversight for. And since the closures of schools last spring, our school-based rehab services have shifted to offer virtual care to students and their families at home. So we will continue to offer virtual programming for any families choosing remote learning. And both occupational therapy, physiotherapy, and speech language will be also available to those that are choosing in-person learning, of course, with consideration to important infection prevention and control principles. We are also planning on new online resources and education for families as additional support. So hopefully that information is helpful. I'm now going to move on to the next question under supports to children. So what nursing services will be available in schools? And what are the plans for supporting children with tracheostomies, suctioning, home ventilation needs in the classroom? So I think first we'll ask Jeannie Bunnell from the LIN to respond. Okay, I'm not sure, Jeannie, maybe if you're, we can't hear you, so hopefully we can circle back. Can you hear us, Jeannie? Okay, so we're going to move on then to our last couple of questions. We'll try and circle back to that one if we can get
okay. Ahead. Okay, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, there she is. Fabulous.
Okay. It wouldn't unmute me for some reason. Sorry about that. I'm Jeannie Bedell. I'm a director of home and community care at the LIN. And I can tell you that our nursing services will be back in the schools. And we will be working very closely with public health in the schools when we have to do any aerosol generating procedure. Perhaps going to a different room and making sure that we use all the precautions necessary to keep the children safe. And in addition to those types of nursing services, we also have our mental health and addiction nurses, which are in the schools and are ready to see any of those children who have some of the mental health issues that need to be addressed.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Jeannie. And then that was a good segue sort of to our last theme here for this evening in terms of the questions, which is around mental health supports. So the first question is what can parents do to help minimize the effects of mental health and skills that the children will go through from staying at home for so long?
So I think Dr. Allison Ayer, family physician and physician leader with the Kids Come First team. Dr. Ayer, are you on the line this evening?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, wonderfully. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm Allison Ayer. I'm a family physician at Centertown Community Health Center, and very excited to hear all the discussion here because I think in many ways, sort of what everyone's doing now is some of the best ways to prepare for the mental health. I think one of the real keys is taking a deep breath and realizing that, you know, our kids have been home for a long time now, and we've had them home for a long time, so everything is very different. So acknowledging that stress and acknowledging that this is going to be a big transition for them as well as for their parents and their whole care team. So one of the best advice being given is to have a plan and have some actions, have some positive actions with notion of what you're going to do, you know, if the child melts down, because I think a lot of children are going to find going back to school difficult. I think many of us have put in place some really special things that we did during COVID to help the transition go in that direction. I think it's important as we go back to school to remember some of those special things and keep some of those special transitions going. And just keeping up that flexibility. I really encourage that, you know, kids with complex needs have action teams around them. And I think everyone in the team is very aware of how stressful this is going to be. So I think the idea of acknowledging the stress, having an action plan, and really using the team, as well as remembering sometimes to just go back to the things we've done that have really helped with the stress during the time of COVID. There are some excellent resources. There are excellent resources on the CHEO website. There's an excellent... there are excellent resources as well on the School Mental Health Ontario website. And I also really want to go back to the statement that was made earlier about the support of peers and of other parents who are going through the same things and having children be able to work with other children. I think we often get the greatest support from our peers. And I really encourage to use those informal supports as well during this time of stress.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Dr. Ayer. There's one last pre-submitted question, and then we'll turn to those that we've seen in the chat. So it says, mental health is equally as important as education. Will our children have social emotional support provided in some capacity? There is talk of more mental health funding, but no evidence of what the funds are being used for. So I'll ask Nathalie Lair with Ottawa Public Health to provide some feedback here.
Hi, I completely agree, and I can't stress enough the importance of mental health. I 100% agree with that. As OPH, we will support the same way we have been doing in the past with the school nurses. They will facilitate all the linkage of the community resources. We also have a separate mental health team that helps collaborate with the mental health agencies in our community and promote services. We will also be making a huge effort to mitigate some of the stigmatization around COVID-19. And once again, those school nurses are there as a liaison to work and provide some services and some resources to those children. And we will be doing that on a consultation basis. As far as the funding, I can't really speak too much to that. It was to hire approximately 180 frontline mental health workers in secondary schools, and it wasn't direct funding to OPH. I hope that answers the question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, we're now going to move over to some of the questions that we're seeing in the chat. And so we'll start with one that Manon from the Ottawa Catholic School Board. Just a clarification from somebody here. Please confirm that OCSB will require children grade 4 and above who cannot wear a mask, that they must have a medical note. If you could just clarify for us, Manon, that would be great.
Continue looking into our website, you will see again lots of questions and answers, and especially regarding the fact that students need to wear masks. Students who do who cannot wear a mask obviously are required to bring in a medical note, and that we will continue obviously to work with the families. Like I said before, wearing a mask is important, but as well hygiene around the washing of the hands is important. physical distancing is important, and if we can support parents and teaching students regarding all of this, I think that it will be a win-win situation for both home and school.
Thank you very much. Dr. Allison Ayer, there's a question here that perhaps I can invite you to respond to. It says, this will be the first time my autistic son will attend a nursery school. He has anxiety and very attached to me. Transitions are hard for him, so as I am seeing constant changes, I'm very concerned about the changes and the unknowns. I want to take a wait-and-see approach. Is that okay? And so, Dr. Ayer, if you would be comfortable perhaps sharing your perspective, that would be great.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. That's an excellent question. Think that any child going to nursery school, to the first bit of school, is terrifying, and particularly when you have an autistic child. What I'm going to say there is, if you're going to take a wait-and-see approach, I hope the wait-and-see approach will be trying to go into the school environment and working with the team there. Our early childhood educators and the guys in the early school, the teachers, are often extremely good at working with this and often really willing to come up with a plan with you. These transitions can take a long time. It's not going to be a quick drop off at school the first day. Oh, we've got a plan. So I really, really, really encourage you to stick in there and to keep working with the team. And when you have frustrations, pull back, do something positive, let it go, and try again. Because I think the mental health supports of being in school are so important for our young ones. So what I'm saying there is, yep, it's going to be hard. Use your team. Use the incredible resources around you in the school because they will support you. If it work one day, go back, do something fun with your child so that it's not a negative experience, and then just keep trying again and using the supports.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Another question from the chat says, when we're speaking about families who have members who are immune compromised, those families often have members get sick in the fall. How are we planning to support those families, since hand washing and avoiding secretions is something they already practice to the best of their abilities, but they just cannot educate with their children? So I wonder, in terms of our panelists here, perhaps Dr. Nisha Sampi, would this be one that we could maybe have some perspective from you on?
Yeah, actually, I'd be happy to share this with Dr. Fanhui. She's able to be on the call.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Hi, it's Dr. Fanhui here. Happy to join the panel. And I'm one of the infectious disease specialists here at CHEO, as well as see a lot of children with who are immunocompromised and with the immune deficiencies. So this is a great question, and with not an easy answer in terms of, you know, real life, still to emphasize the general principles of how you get infection. So I understand the question is more for family members as opposed to the children being immunocompromised.
Yes, it says families who have members who are immune compromised. Yes.
Yeah. So, and it's a lot of vigilance. So what I say to our families, and they're kind of used to knowing what is chronic symptoms of their child versus a new infection. So just extra vigilance. Again, emphasize the same thing that we're saying over and over again in terms of the hand washing, you know, avoiding touching your face and nose. Again, very difficult to do with young children or even some adults. But some families who are highly immunocompromised, let's say there's a sibling that's undergoing chemotherapy or an elderly grandparent, there could be sections of the home that is said to be a bit more for the immunocompromised person, where you might avoid high contact or high frequency of touching for the children coming home from school. So there might be a routine that is implemented in terms of the hand washing, changing of the clothing or something like that when you go home. But again, there's no situation where the risk of transmission will be completely zero. But I think if we add on all these multiple levels or or degrees of prevention that would help at least prevention or transmission of infection. But again, very difficult situation for many families. I'm not sure if that answered your question.
Thank you so much. Okay, so we're going to move on to another question in the chat. We have about 5 minutes left this evening, so see if we can get through a few more here. It says, and I think Jeannie Bonnell from the Lynn, this is one that I'll turn to you for. Please expand on the Lynn delivery model in the COVID context.
Hi, Jen. And just looking through some of the chat, I know that people are wondering whether or not we're going to be able to provide services in the home for those children that are being homeschooled. I think that's sort of the expansion or the questions that I'm seeing. And I can understand how stressful and challenging it's been to look after your children and be responsible for all their needs for the past several months. I can tell you that the ministry is looking very closely at this, and they're exploring options right now. We don't have any set plan yet. We're awaiting further information. But I do encourage you to keep in contact with your Lynn care coordinator, and we will update families as soon as we get any more information.
Great. Thanks very much, Jeannie. So there's a question here for the Ottawa Catholic School Board, so Manon, for you. Will EA support be given directly through virtual school if the student has needed to stay home for medical reasons?
So thank you. I believe that I have addressed this question by saying that absolutely the needs of the students at home or at school are the same needs. So how can we support students? This is how we will obviously be reflective. We are looking at this time on how we can allow educational assistance to support several classrooms. So there will be students in several classrooms. So how can that happen so that they can receive the support that they need? So IEPs continue to be important, obviously. Teachers are important in the delivery of what is needed around IEPs and educational assistance as well. But it's not limited to EAs. It's as well all the other supports that we can bring through our mental health workers, psychologists, social workers, and so on.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And I think we probably have time for one more question here. So it says, knowing that an infected person will not show symptoms up to 15 days, but can spread the virus, how can we make sure that our children are not exposed to the virus? So I'm wondering perhaps public health and perhaps Dr. Nisha Thampi, if either of you would like to respond here.
Sure, I can start. So we know that, so given that, we can see spread with among people with mild symptoms. Our children are protected from being exposed to the virus with a bundle of interventions. We talk about not having the infection in the school, so that's through screening and through screening by family members and from teachers who know the child's symptoms at baseline, and as well as teachers with symptoms and staff not coming into schools when sick. Other interventions also minimize the risk of transmitting those infectious droplets, like physical distancing or plexiglass barriers or face coverings when physical distancing cannot be maintained, and frequent hand washing. And those are, you know, examples of the bundle of interventions that we're hearing this evening about schools having implemented or actively implementing to minimize the risk of spreading the virus in the school environment.
Great. Thanks very much, Dr. Sampi. And I think, Natalie, I know we're at 7:30, but I will open up the line to yourself to also respond here on behalf of public health.
I just wanted to say that was basically a perfect answer. All I can reiterate is, as public health, we will be keeping the same COVID-wise messaging when it comes to prevention, just because if you are asymptomatic. So like she said, wear a mask, isolate if sick, stay 2 meters, and exercise hand hygiene is the best way to prevent getting the virus from someone who's asymptomatic. And I think that's the best message.
Excellent. Thank you. So we're just slightly past 7:30, and this brings us to the end of this evening's town hall session. We know that schools are critical to students' health, including mental health and well-being. For children with specialized care needs, we know that each situation is unique, and they're really note to prioritize and updates and information from Ottawa Public Health, your child's school board, and members of your child's care team. We have shared a slide throughout this session this evening with some links to resources. And if you had registered for the session, I believe you would have received these slides as well.